The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The International Network of People Who Use Drugs recently held another of their exceptionally timely and informative panel discussions entitled Human Rights Violations Against People Who Use Drugs in Sub-Saharan Africa. We're going to hear from a couple of the speakers on today's show. But first, nations around the world are looking into decriminalization of drugs and other vital drug policy reforms. Ireland is no exception. On July 12th, the Irish Parliament's Joint Committee on Justice held a discussion entitled An Examination of the Present Approach to Sanctions for Possession of Certain Amounts of Drugs for Personal Use. One of the invited speakers at this discussion was Brendan Minnish, a board member of CRAN, which is an Irish organization that aims to combat misinformation around cannabis and to advocate for drug law reform, harm reduction, and drug education.
Irish drug policy has failed both society and the vulnerable people it was supposed to protect. For many years, our drug death rates have been amongst the highest in Europe, three times the EU average. Hundreds of people in Ireland die every year due to our current approach to drug policy. Addiction and substance abuse are health issues, not criminal ones. Current policy is outdated and clearly does not recognise this fact. A functioning drug policy is one that works towards reducing the harms of drugs. This is possible. It has been done before. Ireland has much to learn from jurisdictions such as Portugal, Switzerland, Malta, Vancouver, and many more. But we shouldn't copy and paste one programme and expect it to work here. We must come up with our own plan, inspired and influenced by other policies and the latest data. In our submission to the committee, we've outlined a number of recommendations, taking into consideration what has worked from other areas, what hasn't worked from other areas, and what we're hearing from both those who consume drugs and the support services. We propose that Ireland needs a clear, cohesive, multi-year plan that outlines exactly how we're going to reduce drug-related harms. We need to know where we're going to allocate funds, not only into services, but into education as well. Relevant ministers should show steadfast dedication in diverting the direction of drug policy, not least by meeting with foreign partners, but by actually putting together a working policy and evolving this policy to ensure that it meets current needs. Our future drug policy should also be centralized around a set of core pillars, similar to what is being done in Vancouver and what has been done in Switzerland. Harm reduction must be central to these pillars. We also propose a rethinking of how we treat cannabis possession in Ireland. Not only does personal possession of this drug take up the majority of drug-related court cases, costing the state massive amounts of funds and ruining future opportunities for many people, we have also seen alarming trends in counterfeit cannabis that has extreme adverse health impacts. Regulation here is absolutely necessary. We need engagement across the country, targeting areas that are hit by addiction while being flexible enough to adapt to emerging drug trends. We see services such as mobile overdose prevention clinics in Portugal that can access areas in which infrastructure is not yet established. Such pragmatic solutions like this in Ireland are necessary. Without a coherent, compassionate and health-led plan involving all stakeholders, Ireland will fail to make any progress in tackling drug-related harms to society and to users. We acknowledge in our submission the different kinds of drug use and how policy should approach them. We can tackle the alarmingly high rates of addiction in this country. It has been done elsewhere. We cannot do it without a plan. Our submission to this committee gives a number of overviews and analysis of Ireland and the wider world, offers some concrete solutions and raises issues that are often not covered by the mainstream eye. We hope that the committee considers what we have contributed with due care and will continue. And we will continue to engage with the stakeholders on the ground in Ireland and across the world. Thank you.
That was Brendan Minnish, a board member of CRAN, which advocates for drug law reform, harm reduction and drug education. One of the other presenters was Dr. Nuno Capaz, director of the Portuguese Dissuasion Commission.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to address the committee. My name is Nuno Capaz. I'm a sociologist and I work at the Dissuasion Commission of Lisboa. The Dissuasion Commissions are the administrative authorities that were created in 2001 to deal with the procedures regarding the possession of illicit substance for personal usage. In 2001, Portugal decriminalized the possession of illicit substance for personal usage as part of a very comprehensive change in our drug policy. The basic goal was to deal with drug-related issues as a healthcare problem and steer away from the criminal and judicial system. The drug policy change was based on the four-pillar approach, and the dissuasion commissions were the law enforcement pillar. Decriminalizing drug usage for us meant we downgraded the possession of up to 10 days' use from a criminal offense to an administrative offense. In our legal framework nowadays, being caught with a small amount of any illicit substance is very similar to being caught driving without the seatbelt or talking on a mobile phone while driving. It's illegal, but it's not considered a criminal offense, and therefore there's no need to activate the criminal and judicial system. The dissuasion commissions were created under the Ministry of Health, and they work as a diversion scheme. When a drug user is caught in the possession of illicit substances for personal usage, he is notified to present himself in a structure under the Ministry of Health that, after conducting a risk assessment screening, will determine if there will be any administrative sanctions applied or if there will be made any sort of suggestion of referral.
That was Dr. Nuno Capaz, director of the Portuguese Dissuasion Commission, speaking July 12th before the Joint Committee on Justice of the Oireachtas, which is Ireland's parliament. The committee's discussion was entitled An Examination of the Present Approach to Sanctions for Possession of Certain Amounts of Drugs for Personal Use. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Well, as I mentioned at the top of the show, the International Network of People Who Use Drugs recently held a panel discussion entitled Human Rights Violations Against People Who Use Drugs in Sub-Saharan Africa. Let's hear now from one of the speakers. Richard Nini Nawase is a program coordinator with the African Network of People Who Use Drugs.
According to the 2021 World Drug Report, there are an estimated 950,000 people who inject drugs in Sub-Saharan Africa, numbers expected to increase till to 150% by 2050. HIV prevalence among people who inject drugs in the region is estimated at 11%, while the HCV prevalence at 20%. Global research demonstrates the links between the criminalization of drug use and possession and HIV and HCV incidence prevalence among people who inject drugs, making more evident than ever that health impacts are shaped by social and political dynamics. Drug policy in sub-Saharan Africa follows the same misguided path as global drug policy. People whose drugs are simultaneously targeted, hunted down, tortured, and ignored as a result of the global war. Numerous human rights violations are perpetrated against people who use drugs in the name of the war on drugs, including but not limited to the right to health, right to freedom from violence, arbitrary detention and discrimination, and right to participation. In order to address human rights violations against people who use drugs, it is imperative to start by increasing awareness and visibility of this right violation and the specific characteristic they take within the sub-Saharan African region, which cannot be understood without directly listening to people who use drugs themselves. The global COVID-19 pandemic only highlighted the structural inequalities and both compounded and expanded the lack of protection for the community. It exposed people with drugs to increase violence, including from armed groups, arbitrary arrests, and detention and sexual assault. COVID-19 related lockdowns and curfew in several countries were linked to a higher number of cases of gender-based violence against women and girls with drugs, who also struggle with access to legal aid, justice, and well as health as counseling services. This webinar, led by African Network of People with Drugs, in coordination with International Network of People with Drugs, will highlight the growing movement for drug user rights within the region. During the event, a landmark report by African Food on human rights violation during the time of COVID-19 will be launched with the goal of informing future drug-related laws and policies and enhancing and strengthening human rights education programs in Africa. I'd like to end this by thanking all support we get from all our partners. Special mention to INPUT, International Network of People with Drugs, our mother networks, RSAF. Special mention also to Vocal Kenya, our fiscal agent, and a very big, big special mention to in-country networks which made this happen. You guys shall be proud of yourself. Thank you.
That was Richard Nini Nwaze, Program Coordinator with the African Network of People Who Use Drugs, speaking on a panel organized by the African Network of People Who Use Drugs and the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, entitled Human Rights Violations Against People Who Use Drugs in Sub-Saharan Africa. Here's Rita Musa, National Secretary of the Drug Harm Reduction and Advocacy Network, Nigeria.
In West Africa, most West African countries have policies and laws that criminalize drug users, and very few of these West African countries, as we all know, are practicing harm reduction. Some of the similarities, next slide, so that I'm trying to work with my 10 minutes here. Some similarities that were found in West African countries as regarding rights violation. We have policies and justice systems do not protect people who use drugs. And there are inadequate funding for people who use drugs. There's no harm reduction programming. In most of these countries, there's limited understanding of the gender context of drug use. Drugs in itself, harm reduction is still abstract in some countries. And there was a survey that was carried out on torture and ill treatment of drug users in West Africa by West African Drug Policy Network. That was in 2021, early last year. Now, this survey indicates that people who use drugs are routinely subject to physical, mental, sexual violence in the hands of law enforcement in West African countries. Some of these abuses could be death threats. There are beatings, there's to extract information, extortion of money. This is usually done by law enforcement agencies. In Nigeria, precisely, we have the police law enforcement, and then there are other, like the SARS and other people just looking for means to extract money and then incarcerating unlawfully. Then we have the judicial sanctioning, which imposes corporal punishment for drug users. There is no threshold to the drug you are found with, or there's no description as to what exactly should be incarcerated or what exactly deserves punishment in this in this country. Usually, just being a drug user is enough to be incarcerated. And then you have in prisons, you find out that there's constant beating, there's sexual abuse, there's threats of rape, isolation, forced labor. Most times what they do is they arrest people just so they can populate the prisons and then increase their workforces. They just maybe come, like during the farming season, they release a bunch of people that have been arrested unlawfully, like to all these wealthy farmers and stuff. They use them for labor, which is absolutely a human rights violation. Next slide. West African countries like Cameroon, Togo, Senegal, they show very minimal or less involvement with human rights services for people who use drugs. There's barely any harm reduction practices in some of these West African countries. Like, for instance, in Ghana, they were able to legalize cannabis for medical and industrial use. That was in 2020. It was passed on, but the situation with drug users, inhumane treatment, the stigma, and then the unlawful incarceration is still ongoing. In Nigeria, the Human Rights Act do not protect drug users in any form. The government and policymakers, they show no meaningful involvement, although there are conversations about this, like NGOs, networks keep bringing this up. There are, evidence showing how people are being violated, but the conversations always get to a level and then it stops there, but there's no evidence of actually doing, making a difference or changing the narrative. So I'll rush down to the some of the things that we've done, like in the organization. And this is just a symbol, like the war on drugs has led to most of all of this. We have human rights abuses, we have racial disparities, we have over-incarceration, the list goes on. Next slide. Okay, just a little on the legal framework in Nigeria. In Nigeria, the legal framework is controlled mainly on drug use, is mandated only to the NDLEA, which is Drug Law Enforcement Agency in Nigeria. They have there's an NDLEA Act that was an NDLEA Act in 1989. That was the last time it was revised. It establishes that NDLEA is solely responsible for all drug use, all illegal drug use activities in Nigeria, which means NDLEA has the right to incarcerate drug use. They have the right to any lawful decision that is made concerning drug use in the country. Now, the act criminalizes any kind of activity. Could it be used? Could it be production, processing, in any form, sales or use? And all of these forms of drug use activities are all penalized. They all have the same penalty of about 14 to 15 years imprisonment, which is something that we've been, it's still an ongoing conversation. We've been having this conversation about the NDLEA, the Federal Ministry of Health, trying to get a threshold, knowing the difference between the users and the distributors and the evidence we have on how well harm reduction has saved lives. Okay, for drug harm reduction, that's, okay. Now for the network of drug, the Drug Harm Reduction Advocacy Network in Nigeria, which is a network of drug users and comprises of organizations around the country that work directly with community members, people who use drugs. Now, in the era of COVID-19, the organization had a collective, held a collective community consultation where we had all key populations, key affected populations, that we had the MSM group, the FSW, we have the other LGBT groups, and then we have the people who use drugs come in a consortium. We had discussions about some of the human rights violations that have been going on and how COVID-19 has increased some of these things. Now, from this discussion, all that were part of this community consortium were able to bring out some of the reoccurring things, reoccurring issues in our communities. Like here, I listed a few out of the many. We had reduced community awareness on HIV, physical distancing, and then the lack of COVID-19 IC materials, which was something else. There was decreased adherence to treatment due to restriction, higher cost of service, stock out of HIV prevention testing, treatment commodities. And this happened when people could not access HIV services, and then the service providers as well could not come into the community. And then we also had issues where some service units, like clinics where people go to access their service, were on lockdown, like they were locked down throughout the session. So there was a lot of backlashes on so many community issues came up. And then we had the increased mortality rates due to the lack of access and affordability of service. Limited access to KP-specific community-based prevention care and services. Now, this was something that all the population experienced. The services were not coming and you could not access or go out to access the services. And then this also led to the increased rate of mortality because for some community members, that time that they used to sit around with their community members to associate with other people is what maybe keeps them going. Because the isolation, during the isolation, a lot of people were found dead, being in lockdown, you know, some were missing, and then a whole lot of things went out. And there was increased cost of incentives provided by community members. Some of these incentives that were meant to be free because of the COVID-19 era, and there was a lot of people needing food and other stuff, you know, people started selling commodities, and then commodities were hoarded. Some kept it, you know, just for themselves. And so some of these things were listed out during this community consultation. There was increased arrest, like we have it in all the West African countries. And I think almost around the world, there was increased arrest. The law enforcement were just arresting for all sorts of issues. And then most especially in the drug user community, the arrest was unbecoming, because just seeing you on the road, seeing you with one wrap of cigarette, just looking at you, you know, there's this special, they believe there's drug users have a facial appearance, you know, just from just looking at you, there's that assumption that the drug user let's take him in. And then that was just it. There was just a lot of violence going on. And then I worked with a women-led and focused organization, drug user women-led. We had a lot of cases around intimate partner violence, like because of the lockdown, let's say people were not going about their usual business. There was too much, you know, joblessness or just sitting around doing nothing. The intimate partner violence issue we had went on increasing, like continuously. There was child abuse, children were not going out to school, and then, you know, parents were using them as for child labor. Some of these children were forced into child trade, because as I said, a child might be issued a warning for seeing outside, but an adult might be arrested. So children were actually sent in to sell some of these drugs and do other stuff in place of the usual people that do this. The next slide, please. So from the consultation, DRAN, the network, was able to come up with a few ways to assist the communities with some of the grants we got from our partnering organizations. Like, first, we created and strengthened IAC platforms to promote community mobilization and to engage in community service delivery by creating a community to population hub. Now, this was like a site, an online site, where all key populations could come, only key population. There was restriction to this site, this platform being strictly for key population members. And when I say key population, it includes all populations, the MSM, the LGBTQ, the FSW, and then the period population. We had a platform where we could come and disseminate information, communicate and assist. And there are cases where we had responses to emergency situations, you know, due to information shared in these platforms, which also helped us. And then we had capacity building for community leaders on community-led monitoring. This was as a result of our trying to engage with the CCM in our countries, the law enforcers, and then we had to learn how to keep data, how to gather information, you know, how to do monitoring, and how to be ready for any further steps. Being also that there have been so many surveys that have been going on, but we are yet to have like direct or information that aligns to key populations being distributed. Some of these informations, like from the IDBSS, from the KPISE, they were not necessarily disseminated down onto the networks, the key population networks in the country. So we had to do the community-led monitoring. So in a case of any survey or anything, community members are ready to climb back on this and then gather our own information. And then also we had DRAN developed IAC materials, which through this DRAN IAC materials, we had one that provided linkages and services based on the state and location you are. This IAC material was able to bring out contact persons and then like OSS, the one-stop shops in the different states where key populations could easily assess treatment or call for services and call for engagement and help, and even for human rights assistance. Then we also did community build, capacity building on community policing, which is also just recently concluded. Next slide, please. Okay, more on interventions that we provided. We had community, this actually penetrated service scale of poor population. This was from, I think, Global Fund CRG grants, where we had a lot of training around gender and gender, which was centered around gender and human rights for women who use drugs. And then the GF HIV, which started in 2018, which was actually stopped somewhere around the COVID era. There was no interventions. There was no, I think the grant stopped around 2018. And then it resumed back in 2021. But I think proper commencement took place somewhere around 2022, early this year, about 3 or 4 months now. There's been provision of NSP in about 3 states that DRAN coordinates in 3 different states in Nigeria. And then just the NSP. Now, conversations about OSP is still ongoing. Like, we recently found out that the Federal Ministry of Health, like the Nigerian government, have, I think they have an issue or so with the term OSP, that's opioid substitution therapy. Now, the new term that has been tabled and we're still awaiting, we are awaiting to see how they respond to it. They came up with it themselves. It said medically assisted treatment, which is MAT. So in place of OSP, we are getting MAT, which also is something that is part of the NSH. As far as they'll be providing the substitution therapies for persons who use drug, I think it's a bonus, and it's all seeing our harm reduction coming to actualization. Then we had capacity building of outreach workers on differentiated service. This was under the GIF fund. It's still ongoing. And yes, of recent, DRAN organized the Drug User Symposium. I should give a lot of breakdown on this, but this just happened like about weeks ago. But there's a lot of information we gathered from this symposium. We had our stakeholders from the Ministry of Health. We had the representatives of partners, and then PRs, different organizations. We have community members, a lot of them. I think in this symposium, we had over 100 participants where almost everyone had the time to make contributions. And from these contributions, we're able to come up with a few recommendations. Now, some of these recommendations were built up from the community members and then from the views of law enforcement agency on things that were necessary or things that need to be addressed in the country. Most importantly, we all agree that there needs to be a threshold of drug possession. There needs to be a defining factor before arrest. This is one of the key things that we still have. We all recommended, and from here on, we are just going to keep trying to see how we push this forward with our government, and hopefully all West African countries will come to adopt a threshold that would help define and reduce the human rights violations in these countries. Now, we have treatments, not arrest of drug user, which is harm reduction in itself, which is decriminalization in itself, incarceration of drug use distributors. We've had a table, like we have the Drug Demand Reduction Committee.
That was Rita Musa, National Secretary of the Drug Harm Reduction and Advocacy Network Nigeria, speaking on a panel organized by the African Network of People Who Use Drugs and the International Network of People Who Use Drugs, entitled Human Rights Violations Against People Who Use Drugs in Sub-Saharan Africa. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. This is Doug McVeigh saying so long. So long. For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.